live from State Street in the heart of Chicago. You are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Sylvie is off this week. I'm Jesse Rogers, sitting in till 6:30.
How are you?
With my buddy Tommy Waddle. Good, good. Back from
a few
weeks in spring training.
How long were you out there?
Well, I was in Arizona for about four with a quick weekend off.
Yeah.
And then in
Florida. Do you like being out there?
Florida for eight. Arizona's great. Like Florida. I'm sure you know Florida is separated, you know, the spring training, east side, west side.
So it's more of a travel hassle.
Big travel hassle.
Whereas in Arizona,
you can bounce around, see different games. You go to three camps in a day. Can't do that in Florida, but it was fine. Like, it's cool to go to other camps besides the Cubs and Sox, you know?
What do you make of my suggestion? I've had this for quite some time.
I think I mentioned
it on Friday. I think it flew under the radar a little bit with Tyler. Because I think the Cubs don't play at home until what?
Just next Monday.
Oh, is that when it is?
Yeah, one series away. That's it.
I thought it was whatever.
Okay.
I said for some of the teams that struggle through difficult weather early in the season, why not play some of your home games at your spring training facility?
I mean, attendance, right?
Well, how many people are you getting up there when it's 32 degrees and sleet's banking off your forehead?
You're still getting more than 15,000. Look,
are you?
Yeah, I don't...
18?
Well, opening day you do at least.
Okay.
After that, you're right. Midweek games don't do so well in April.
Okay, so let's take the composite or the collective total of six games at home in crappy weather.
And put them out there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm trying to help.
No, I agree.
Trying to help Major League Baseball.
It's funny you bring that up because just a couple days ago I looked at the schedule because I'm always about day to day. And the Cubs and Sox are both home next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That is a stupid use of your schedule.
That's my point, Jess.
I don't think I've ever seen them both home at the same time in April. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, both at home next week.
You could go three game set with somebody, whoever it is, and also in a winter climate, so to speak, at your facility out in Arizona for three games, and then when the weather gets better, you come here.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea.
At the end of the day, how much is it really costing you in terms of attendance?
Yeah.
Not much.
Well, because
I'm just saying.
No, well, what you bring up one good point is you can have an opening day out there, then an opening day here, and still sell it out.
Boom.
I'm with you. I like that. I'm going to run that up the flagpole.
Please do. I'm just telling you.
Without a doubt. What do you think? 312-332-3776.
Throw your curveball.
Would you like to see opening day in Glendale and Mesa, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, they wouldn't, because like if you live in Chicago, you're not going to be able to go there.
That's a good point.
I just think baseball, I think it's stupid to have your guys out there like in weather that they're not used to.
So that's one thing. Jumping around to camps late in the spring here, one of the overriding thoughts, managers are talking about opening day, and they're like, we have no idea how we're going to pitch or hit when you do this transfer to the cold weather.
Right.
He's like, the only thing we can control is if you're playing a clean game. So that's all they care about at the end. They have no idea if they're going to hit next week.
I can hear people right now, too, Jess, the older fan crew, screaming, what are you talking about? Everyone's so soft now. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, though, that's the way it is. It is what it is right now. So why revert back to the old days when people are not, like, guys don't throw 200 innings anymore.
What?
If you throw 185 innings, you're a horse these days, right?
I got a better idea. Have the season start May 1st and go to September 1st.
I'm with you on that as well. And look, I Sylvie and I have had this conversation a bunch over the past, and, you know, we've had a disagreement about, like, I don't need 162 games.
No.
But I get Sylvie's point. He's like, he says,
that's because he's used to it. I've said this often. If you were starting the sport from scratch, would anybody pick 162? You would say, 100 games seems about right.
But I get the
would pick 162.
I get the other side of the argument. Look, they're there if you want them, and they're not there if you don't want them. I'm just telling you, like, I think you could solve maybe some of your issues with regard to weather and some of the other stuff.
And also, they've expanded the playoffs. So they're trying to squeeze all these games in a short period. You could have a nice best of seven, three or four rounds in good weather and never have to worry about it. There's so many good reasons to shorten the season, including attention span of fans these days.
Right. Well, like, if you're trying to appeal to kids, how appealing is it to a 13-year-old kid that snow is falling for a baseball game, and at that point you're not even starting your regular starter, you're in a bullpen game because you don't want to get anyone hurt? Whoa, let's, you know what, we're really marketing the game to the young crew now, right?
But we digress. 312-332-3776
You call it digression, I call it fixing baseball.
Yeah, I know you do. We're going to hear from Ryan Poles today as he met the media at the owners' meetings. We're going to talk to Courtney Cronin. We are going to hopefully talk to my colleague out in L.A., Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Dodgers and has covered Ohtani for years.
When is that press conference
today? I think about 4:45 our time. He's going to give a statement.
4:45 our time. Yeah. Let's take a guess. Everybody throw in a dollar because it is gambling.
Yes.
Just
it's about gambling.
Five.
So.
Let's guess how long it lasts.
Yeah. How long is this statement going
to
last?
To the total amount of time. And we have to set the parameters. So it starts when he says hello.
Yeah, sure.
And not when anybody starts and says there will be a statement.
When he starts talking.
Yes. He's reading off the card.
Whatever. Right. And it ends when he stops.
Yeah. All right. You want to do it right now? Charlie, what do you got?
We'll go with Charlie. Charlie?
I'll say, I'll put it at a two minutes even.
2 minutes even.
Ooh, he took my guess. All right. I'm
Tyler.
Tyler. It's like the Price is Right, closest to without going over.
I'm going
to
go.
No, we're going closest to.
I'm kidding.
Yeah,
closest
I mean,
to.
We're not going to go.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
go a minute 35.
Minute 35. You can go next. I'll go last.
I like the way they're thinking because talking for 2 minutes straight, it's longer than you think. So I'm going to go 140. I'm going to go near Tyler. 140.
I'm
going to
go 1 minute and 5 seconds.
You're going the shortest, huh?
Let's go. Let's get the money out.
I think you're probably going to win because even a minute is actually a long time.
Anybody got cash on?
I got cash. Yeah.
I got cash.
Okay, how much you want to?
We're going to Venmo each other a dollar. Is that it?
I don't Venmo.
It's too complicated.
Guy I know in security says don't do it.
What if it's the Joe Pesci $1? After winning for Goodfellas and he just says it's an honor?
So it's 2 minutes,
away.
140, 135, and 105.
Let's go. Right. Money in hand.
Money's in
hand.
Dollars in.
$1.
Now, next question for a dollar. Does he throw the interpreter under the bus and run?
Okay, let's go again.
Run him over back and forth.
I don't have much cash on me.
Here we go. I'll spot you, Chuck.
So here's the question. Is it all on the interpreter, everything, stealing the money, everything, or does he take some accountability? Charlie?
I'm going to say it's like a big-time bus toss.
A big-time what?
Bus toss. He's going to throw him under the bus.
Throw him under the bus. Tyler?
I'll say he finds a way to weasel out of it, so no.
It's got to be a bus toss, Jess, because otherwise he'd gone from one story to another story, back to a third story.
But it doesn't matter. We're already past him changing stories.
Bus toss.
I'm going to say he says that he knows about the money being transferred. Because otherwise, he's accusing this guy of stealing $4.5 million.
My point is he's going to bus toss his guy saying it was his bet.
Yes,
and
agree
he was covering
there,
his
but
bet.
But he's going to admit to covering it.
Okay.
Which in the second
story version. I don't know how we
version.
Pay off this bet. Because this is not a close.
This is pretty subjective, pretty quick.
Subjective.
Hit drop rule.
Yeah. He takes some accountability is what I'm going to say. And these guys are saying none.
I think what he takes accountability for is paying off his buddy's debt.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page.
That would be back to story one. That's back to story one.
Now, I will say this as well.
I love this.
If there is any implication at all that there was gambling on baseball, and you can't determine who actually was responsible for it, because the account can be with his interpreter,
sure.
But you don't know who actually, I mean, I'm hypothesizing.
Yeah.
If, in fact, they find out that baseball games were bet on, I don't know how the league couldn't impose the death penalty
That is the monster of all gray areas there. If it's in the interpreter's name and he is technically doing the baseball betting.
Correct.
You know, if.
That's a guy who makes $300,000 a year and he's going to have a $4.5 million, you know, marker against him. Now, again, I'm saying to you is and I got a, you know, I'm got a horse in the race. All this gambling parlance. I mean, you can't because of how important he is to baseball. and the revenue streams that they're hoping to tap into. You can't just sweep any of this under the rug when the greatest, you know, the hits leader, the hits yeah. king, has been out of baseball right. for X number of years.
No, I agree
because
with you. Two things. One, there's absolutely no indication yet from the unsavory figures to the people doing the investigating, right. all that anybody bet on baseball involved in this story. There's no indication.
I'm just saying it.
Which, again, I find still amazing. If this guy was racking up millions and millions in losses in soccer, and he never once thought, oh, maybe I can get even on baseball. But it's possible he understood what his career, Ohtani's career, would be over, and he just would rather rack up the losses and think he's going to get even that way.
I would think that this would be fairly easy to kind of investigate and figure it out.
Yeah, and that's why in ESPN's investigation, the fact that they haven't found anybody willing even to say, even unsavory characters,
just subpoena the texts or the exchanges?
Yeah, maybe they have. Maybe
there's got to be a digital footprint yeah. left.
But, there's police sources and stuff, and nobody has told our investigative people.
Listen, this is all speculation on my behalf. I'm just saying if.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, look, my guess or my money, again, would be on him covering his friend's debts.
Again, let's open it up for our listeners. What do you think Ohtani's going to do, and can you get down here with a dollar?
Right, exactly. And by the way, if in fact it is proven that he bet on sports but not baseball, then I don't have a problem with it at all. I mean, again, you can't live in the environment where you're taking revenue from these gambling entities and have a rule that says you're allowed to gamble on baseball. Like I said, I think Tyler and I looked it up. It was a Marlins pitcher who got busted for using a bookie illegally, placing illegal bets with a bookie, but not on anything baseball related, and in Major League Baseball just fined him. So, I mean, if that's the case, then that's all you do.
I agree with you. And I feel like people like to throw, there's hypocrisy involved because they're in bed with these gambling entities, yet there's these rules. And I say, you know what? There's a line. You know, if you have the privilege of playing professional sports, you don't get to bet on the sport you play. That's common sense.
Absolutely.
But if the world says that gambling's not legal for everyone else, that should be, you know, like, there's a separation there. You know, you play in the sport, you don't get to bet on it. I don't think it's that big of a hypocrisy. I get what people are saying. You know, I see Twitter, like, Ohtani's statement today brought to you by DraftKings. You know, I get all the jokes.
Yeah.
But like, if you're a grown-up and you play professional sports, you can't bet on the sport. Like,
I don't think that's asking that too much.
Right.
I don't think it's asking too much.
Yeah.
I think the least likely scenario here is that he had money stolen from him, the one that they're actually using.
I agree with you.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if you guys feel differently, but of all of the different possibilities, the one that seems least likely to me is that somebody had access to over $4 million worth of his resources without anything.
No agent, no trigger at the bank. He needed all the password information, whatever. Yes. I don't know how it works with rich people, but there's got to be layers.
It works the same way with people that aren't rich, Jess. It's just in smaller amounts.
There's got to be layers. Now, maybe he had all the passwords still. You're transferring $500,000 at a time.
I don't care if it's your best friend. I have a best friend. He doesn't have all my passwords.
Right. So I'm with you. 312-332-3776. What do you think Ohtani is going to say today? And how long do you think he'll go with this statement without taking questions the whole 9 yards? It's going to be a zoo out there.
It is.
312-332-3776.
Yeah. I'd also like to get everybody's impression on what you saw this weekend in college basketball.
Yeah.
I see you're wearing your North Carolina pullover.
Yeah.
Tyler's got his ACC hat on.
We both picked North Carolina.
I actually have a DePaul shirt on right now.
Why?
Go Blue Demons.
Because it was the only thing clean in his apartment.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of down on shirts right now.
So, Tommy, follow me on this. I don't think we had that much madness this weekend.
No, it was all chalk.
Yeah.
For the most part. Oregon got beat by Baylor.
Right.
Or Baylor got beat by Oregon.
Clemson.
I'm sorry.
There were a few of those. Oakland beat Kentucky. That was the biggest one.
Yeah.
Right. There were a couple. Northwestern went to overtime the first game. But I counted up 48 games, right? 32 the first week, then 16. Is that right? 48 games. Do I have that right, Tyler?
I don't know.
32 plus 16, yeah.
Yes, 48. I counted up only 13 were within, I think, 7 or 8 points. Only 13 games ended within 7 or 8. And even 7 or 8 isn't that close. Like, there were probably less, a lot less than that. Not probably. There were a lot less than that that finished, like, within three or four. I didn't count that up. But 13 out of 48 somewhat close games, that's not a lot. There were tons of blowouts.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking forward to Northwestern. You know, could they pull off the big up? They, listen, I mean, it's not so much Northwestern. UConn looked like just a beast, last night.
It was really an all-chalk weekend, right?
It was.
Other than, and most of it wasn't just wins, like you said. It was blowouts. They were games that were won handily. Clemson over Baylor was really the only upset, right? You had Houston going to overtime against Texas A&M, but ultimately got over that hump. And I got to tell you, as cool as the first couple days were, Thursday and Friday, I got no problem with what transpired Saturday and Sunday. I don't know how everybody feels, because I think that the games Thursday and Friday of this week, are going to be better because the better teams advance.
That's the consolation. I still like a random 11 or 12 with a chance to go all the way, and we really don't have that.
I think you got NC State still
NC
alive,
State's
right?
still at 11, yeah. So, but you know what I mean. We don't even have the multiple high seeds with a shot. But I agree with you. Illinois-Iowa State, for example, is going to be a great game. A great game. And we have a few of those kinds of matchups this weekend. And as they whittle it down, it's going to be even better.
I thought Illinois was, and I haven't seen a lot of that. I haven't seen any real college basketball. For me, the college basketball season starts when the tournament starts.
Yeah.
That's just how I consume college basketball. I thought, based on all of the basketball I watched this weekend, I thought Illinois was as impressive as anyone I saw play.
So I would, for the most part, agree with you. I don't think they were more impressive. Like, UConn was pretty, Purdue was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But they're in that team photo. They're in that team photo. And here's another thing. With all the, you know, when you fill out your brackets, for years, Tommy, for years, all I heard was, take the teams with experienced guards. Experienced guards go far. But you know what? Big men are pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Now, not every team has a good big man every year. I get that. But you know what? Purdue has a big man. UConn has a big man. Take those guys if they're good. There's plenty of big men. They're not all good. So forget about the guards. If you have a big man, that's still a luxury at this level. I mean, these guys were dominant. We're dominant in the middle. And so that's kind of who I like in these games. Like, I like the teams that have these unbelievable big men. Edie, and I call him Klingon on UConn. Klingon, what's his name? Klingon, right?
Donovan Klingon.
Klingon, yeah.
Guy, too. Played in Bristol.
So good.
Like East Bristol, Connecticut.
I mean, he had like eight blocks without even, you know, breaking a sweat, really.
Yeah.
Against North.
He's a monster, 7'2".
Boo Booey could not go down the lane at all against this guy.
A tip of the cap to Chris Collins and Northwestern. They had, you know, obviously they ran into a buzzsaw. They've got beat by the number one overall seed, but it was a very good year for them. They were missing some guys at the end of the year, too, weren't they?
Their center was a big one.
A guard and a center.
Yeah. The center was a big one that would have came into play yesterday. Yeah.
But the guard was the better player.
No, I know. But yesterday they could have used him against Klingon. But I agree with you. They maxed out. Yeah. They lost to the defending champs, who look as good as they did last year, maybe even better. Offensively, man, they looked really good last night. 312-332-3776. So you brought up Illinois looking great, and we have a shot here in this state to see a Final Four team, which is cool. Who looked best to you throughout the weekend? 312-332-3776. I gave Purdue or UConn a little bit of an edge over Illinois, but Illinois looked darn good, especially taking down Duquesne. I mean, that's the other thing. These games that were blowouts, they were blowouts from like the first 5 minutes. Most of these teams got down and never put on a run. So it wasn't the most entertaining first weekend to me.
Let's clean up some of these gambling calls.
All right, let's go to John in Barrington. You're on ESPN 1000. John, what's up?
Hey, guys. This Ohtani thing, by the way, longtime listener.
Thank you, John.
I don't think it's that hard to figure out, because no bookie is going to extend $4.5 million worth of credit to a translator that makes $400,000 or $500,000 a year. These had to be Ohtani's bets. He's lying.
Or, John, would a bookie take his bets if, in fact, he had some sort of guarantee or believed there was some sort of guarantee because of the relationship?
I don't think bookies work that way, Tommy.
Okay. It's fair. I mean, that's common
thinking. There's no way this kid was doing it without Ohtani's deeply involved.
And by the way, like I said, I think the least likely story is the one where something was stolen from him. That's the one that
It was a couple $100, sure.
Yeah.
$4.5 million? Right. No, it doesn't. Let's go to Elmer Steve, one of our favorites. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, guys. You know, that was my thinking, is that, you know, if this was $450 that he took, that then it'd be like, okay, it's a misdemeanor, and he could get probation, and there'd be no trouble. But if he says this guy stole $4.5 million, he's looking at major jail time. I don't think, you know, too many people are going to be willing to send somebody that's supposedly a good friend of theirs to jail for a prolonged period of time for something that they really didn't do.
Can he have it both ways, those guys? Can he say it was stolen, and then 6 months from now, quietly drop the charges? Could he do that?
Then he'd be in trouble for perjury.
No, but
or
but
if he just decides not to said, press charges.
Isn't it up to Otani to press charges?
Yeah. That I don't know.
Yeah, but if he makes a statement to the police that's a false statement, he's going to get himself into trouble with that.
I don't think the police are involved.
Yeah, I'm not talking about a false statement. I'm saying, yes, it was stolen, but this is my buddy. I'm not going to press charges. Yeah. That's the way to split the difference here.
I don't know. I'm a few credits shy of my legal degree, but I would think to have a legal entanglement here, he would have to then file a complaint, a criminal complaint against his interpreter, right?
Yeah.
That's what I would... It's
messy.
It's a tangled web they've weaved, and it's unfortunate for Major League Baseball because you kind of felt like they were on the cusp of actually, you know, developing some really good publicity.
Yeah, for sure. I think their first story was the real story, and they should have just stuck with that. I think they got nervous that it would have come out that Otani paid a bookmaker, whether it was helping out a friend or not. And even though that's illegal, it would have been a slap on the wrist. Oh, I didn't know. I'm from Japan. I didn't know this was illegal. I paid this guy. I thought it was legal. You know, you make up something.
Because of the cultural, you know, aspect of this, I like you said, he probably understands and speaks more English than he lets on. But if you're going to be gambling high stakes like that, wouldn't just some bookmaker in California in San Juan Capistrano or wherever it is, it seems like an odd connection.
It does. All right, we'll discuss this and more. Who was the best team over the weekend? Who impressed you the most? Maybe it was Illinois. They look great. 312-332-3776. Jesse Rogers sitting in for Sylvie. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
It's from your private stash of music, isn't it?
Yeah.
Took this right off the DVD player or CD player, whatever it's called. You know what? Like when we were cleaning the house, I transferred like probably 1,000 DVDs from one house to the next.
Did
and
you
I was
really?
Just like, I looked
what
at my wife and I go,
them?
What am I doing with these?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're going to have grandkids and maybe by that time, then, like, I also took a DVD player with me.
I'm gonna have to move in a few months myself, and we're starting that process. I know.
Throw it out.
Throw it out. That's what
just
I'm telling
throw it
my
out.
Wife.
If there's any question, right. Throw it out.
But the beautiful thing is not...
Or donate it.
Not having a lot in the first place on my side, me, is perfect.
Like, well, I don't
she's
either.
Got, you know,
yeah.
Things the kids wear, first grade art projects.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, look at for...
I have years worth of that stuff with four kids. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
we can get rid of some of that, right? How many Thanksgiving turkey pictures do you need?
Exactly.
From your kids?
Yes.
312-332-3776. Sylvie's off. Jesse Rogers in 3:30 on this Monday. Hope you're having a good day. When's Sylvie back? Wednesday, Thursday, opening day. He's got to be back
Thursday,
for opening day,
right?
Yes.
I think I'm working with
this kid. Doesn't miss an opener, does he?
No, I don't think so.
With the vacation he gets, he's not missing opening day.
Listen, Jess,
there's a White Sox game that day.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean.
I support him in his ability and his right to take his vacation time however he likes.
But not when the Cubs and Sox are playing.
Cubs play
that
night. He'll be back for that.
That's sacred. In fact,
and the Cubs play or the Sox play on the air, right?
Yeah,
on air.
Yes, we have the Sox on these airways. Tommy,
I meant during the day on Thursday.
Your Thursday is going to be really fun. Okay, you get off the air. You're going
to. Well, I don't even know if I'm going to be on the air.
Okay, even better.
Game starts at 3, right?
Even better. You're not on. I thought you're doing the
pregame. What do you mean even better?
I thought you're doing the pregame 2:30 to 3:00.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's so, me. Yeah.
So you're gonna watch the Sox.
I think Tyler's got it, right? Don't you got the pregame?
No.
We have a guy who's got it.
No.
3:00 White Sox, okay. Yeah. That leaves, you know, although with the rule changes it won't go 3.5 hours, but anyway, 6:35, Cubs and Rangers.
Yeah.
Okay. Leads right into 9:00, Illinois, Iowa State.
Perfect.
How about that day?
That's good.
How
That's
about
good.
That day?
Yes.
Some people are complaining it's 9:00 too late, but you know what? Too bad.
Yeah.
Too I bad, like so the sad. Idea of 3:00 baseball, 6:30 baseball, 9:00. You end your night with the Illini.
What a day. What a
the
day that is.
Illini.
What a day that is. That is a good schedule.
So that's coming up this Thursday. And you know where I'll be? In Philadelphia for the Braves and Phillies.
Really?
Bristol wants me there for opening day.
Okay. I can understand that.
I get it. They're rivals, but it's not, you know, doesn't have the same ring as being in Texas for Cubs Rangers.
No, it doesn't.
When the Rangers get their rings and the banner.
Right. I was going to say.
You know, all that stuff.
Why are they sending you to Philly?
Because Sunday Night Baseball is doing the Thursday game, so we have ESPN people down there.
Okay.
Since you asked.
That's right. It's an ESPN game,
and
right?
Remember the way the Phillies and Braves ended with... Remember Bryce Harper staring down Orlando Arcia in the playoffs?
Not really.
You'll be reminded when you watch me on SportsCenter.
I'm sure.
Thursday.
I see, like, I don't like to, it's not conscious, but I don't really cling to those memories. I like to make new memories every year.
Well, it's also, why would you have a memory of the Braves and Phillies, right?
That's a good point.
But I was covering it, so whatever.
Good.
In any case, Thursday's going to be a lot of fun around here with baseball and the Flying Illini. Were they the best team you saw this weekend? 312-332-3776. If not, then who was? What do you think Ohtani's going to say today? And how long do you think he's going to say it? Because he is not taking questions from reporters. But let's not bury the lead
the
here.
The biggest story here locally is that Ryan Poles actually met the media today as the NFL League meetings were, well, they've been underway for a couple of days now. And I believe Courtney Cronin was there. And will join us at 4:00, but we do have some sound from today.
Ryan Poles addressing the Justin Fields trade for the first time publicly, right? He talked with reporters, and let's start there. What did he have to say on if other teams were in on Fields?
Yeah, there were other teams. You know, the Steelers were just an opportunity where it was almost like a more of a, you know, they have a starter with Russ, but there was more of an open competition, it felt like, from my perspective. Where there are other opportunities where there were some, you know, quarterbacks that are veteran guys or young guys that would already have been paid. So it would have been a tougher situation for him.
Can I say something about this?
Yes,
whole,
you can.
We wanted to give him the bet. Boy, I mean, I was at spring training, and I'm not a Bears reporter, but they really got that out there quick, that they took care of Fields and traded him to the best situation for him, and they could have gotten a better. I don't know.
I said it at the time. I don't believe at all that they
turned down
a significantly better deal,
right?
Because at that point, which his obligation is to the organization, not to Justin Fields first. His obligation is to the organization, and I believe that he would have followed that policy. Was there an opportunity, maybe, to trade him somewhere where there was a marginally better
conditional
return,
fifth round pick,
whatever,
or something?
Yeah. Maybe so. I have no inside knowledge to that. That wouldn't chap my ass in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But the thought that he got, you know, duped by the league, or that he took significantly less just to appease Justin, to me is
but boy,
unbelievable.
They rushed that story out there, though, that they took care of Fields.
Well, they did that for good reason. I think, first of all, I think that it was good policy because Justin was a good teammate. He was a good, you know, a good member of the Chicago Bears. He was a good leader. He worked hard. He represented the organization and the city very, very well. So I don't have any problem with them wanting to do right by him. I think that the Steelers are a good landing spot for him.
It also shows the rest of the world.
Rest of the league, yeah.
We're
going to do business the right way.
I get it. I mean, I'm just being a little tongue-in-cheek about it.
No, but I'm with you. Like, I think it's silly to think. I think it's ridiculous to think that Ryan Poles would have ever taken significantly less in a trade just because he wanted to do right by a player, as much goodwill as you have for said player.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this worked out. I thought it was an awful idea to bring both guys to camp. I don't think that was ever going to be something that they entertained seriously. I believe, and there's probably a cut here as well, that where Ryan acknowledges that maybe the market, he anticipated the market to be a little bigger and a little hotter than it was. But at the end of the day, it was what it was. And I think you saw their intent was to make sure that they went to the gate with their first overall selection, and he's their guy, and they're going to build forward with him.
Let's get to the next one from Ryan Poles. Why things didn't work out with Justin Fields?
There's a lot to unpack there. You know, I think, you know, if you go through the whole deal, like in the very beginning, I think there was a choppy start, you know, rookie year. And then when I came in, you know, we had some cleaning up to do, which then delayed another year of adding talent and supporting. And then just in terms of the game, you know, I feel like he was making strides and improving. The problem is, and it's really, and that's what I try to explain, is it wasn't Justin versus one of these rookies. It's really the timeline and how much runway that you have, because really to get a guy up off the ground, you need to support him with as much talent as possible. And then that flips, because then they take so much cap space, which is a good thing if you get to that point. But then they have to be the reason you start winning. So then it's harder to add the talent, you know, around them. And you can look around the league, and it happens a lot. And really the teams that can sustain success through that period, I think, do a really special job.
You know, the cap space is really his out in this whole thing, because he is walking a fine line. Like, he wasn't good enough. That's why he's gone.
Jess, I think that is an excellent observation, that it gives them a way to move forward without being overly critical of Justin. Yeah. And again, I liked his explanation at the beginning that Justin found himself in a really difficult situation. He was drafted by the group ahead of Ryan Poles, and that was a disaster. When Ryan Poles got here, he did what was best for the organization, which was tear it down. That was not beneficial to Justin. Yep. I am, and I said this before, and I will stay consistent with it, I would not have made this decision based purely on financials. It is part of the equation. But I don't pivot and move on unless I believe the guy that I'm drafting is a better football player than the guy we moved on from and traded. That to me is first and foremost.
For sure.
I'm not doing it just for financial reasons. I'm doing this because Caleb Williams, we'll use him as the guy that most likely, because they believe Caleb Williams is going to be a better quarterback than Justin Fields, and that's sooner rather than later. My expectation is based on the infrastructure that they've put in place for Caleb Williams versus the infrastructure they had in place for Justin Fields, and watching Caleb Williams and watching Justin Fields, my expectation is by the time Caleb Williams gets to the end of his rookie deal, or his rookie season, rather, he should be playing better than Justin did.
Right.
He should be better than Justin. And again, it's going to be a roller coaster. It'll be up and down. But you're drafting him one overall because you feel he's got unique talents.
Yeah.
And you moved on from Justin because he wasn't good enough consistently enough.
Yeah, and you go back to the whole cap space thing. There's no amount of money that isn't worth a good quarterback. In other words, if your quarterback's good, who cares how much cap space he will make everybody else better.
Yes, we talked about this throughout the season. Like, the best thing that could have ever happened, and we talked about it when the season kicked off, is that Justin defined himself as the undeniable quarterback for this team for the future. And then that way you could use all of your resources, financial and draft currency, on building around him. If, in fact, he had proven that to them, that's the route they would have taken.
Yeah, for sure.
So we can talk about the financial benefit to resetting the clock, and it is part of the equation. But you don't make this move and this pivot unless you are convinced that the guy you're drafting is a significant better player than the guy you have.
He would have ignored the financial
advantage
if Justin was the man.
Yes.
What did he learn about Caleb Williams? Here's Ryan Poles.
When you talk to his teammates, they don't like him. They love his leadership, how he brings people together. He's intentional with his leadership. Same goes with the staff. I'm having a hard time finding a person that doesn't like him or even love him and thinks, you know, that he can reach the highest limits. So the feedback's been good.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. But as I said to you guys, I think we were talking football when I was reporting from Florida last week to you guys. This is a new world. We have no idea how any of these guys are going to be when they walk into a locker room with $10 million in his pocket or whatever the number is. The number is larger than you got, Tommy.
That is
no matter how much BC paid for you.
I got $4,000.
It was a lot more.
BC paid me zero.
Okay. but you see what I mean.
But the Bears gave me $4,000 when I signed. So it was a different circumstance. That's why I think when Ryan Poles stood at the podium or sat at the podium, I think in his postseason press conference with Matt Eberflus, he said this process, and he didn't identify Caleb specifically, but the process about getting to know the individuals. And I think you're right. I think all of the film work is already done, has been done for quite some time. This was about becoming comfortable with who Caleb Williams is as a teammate, as a leader, as you know, someone inside your locker room, as the face of your franchise potentially at some point. And I think that that was the most important part of the evaluation for Ryan Poles and his people. And it sounds like that they've been very comfortable with what they've
found. For sure. I'm just stating that it's a new world. And going forward years from now, that's going to be on the table all the time. Is this guy with money in his pocket as driven as he was without money in his pocket? It is a legit question.
And we could talk about this later as well. I don't know if you saw the bite from Deion Sanders talking about his son and the other young man. What's his, Travis Hunter? Is that the name of the player? Mm-hmm. Who are projected to be top five, top 10 picks next year. Or that's what Deion's projecting. And Deion said, like, there are certain cities these two guys I won't let them go to. And that's kind of the power play that RG3 was talking about last week with regard to Caleb Williams and why he should shun the Bears because of their long history of quarterback ineptitude. But I think that's ignoring that the Bears are actually a pretty good landing spot for the first overall pick for the reasons that we've talked about for quite some time now. The infrastructure's better. Yeah. There's more talent there. But I think that because of what you're saying, and you know the power that has been kind of gained by these players with NIL and then coming into the league because they've got some money in their pocket, they're going to be able to exercise that power a little bit more frequently going forward, as you say.
No doubt. Tom Waddle, Jesse Rogers sitting in for Sylvie here till 6:30. We'll take your phone calls on this. 312-332-3776 is the number, and you'll hear more from Ryan Poles when we come back. Will he extend Keenan Allen? That's next on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. Listen now on ESPN 1000. This is Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
We'll talk to Courtney Cronin live from the owners meetings. That's in Orlando, right, Tyler?
Yes.
Okay, that's coming up at 4. I'm Jesse Rogers sitting in for Mark Silverman, Tom Waddle alongside till 6:30.
Yeah.
We'll do Waddle's World at 4:30, Aki's A-List at 5.
Got any stories you want to bring to the table today?
I really don't. I don't like to intrude on your
thing. There's a couple of good ones today. There's a lot of football stuff, but there's a couple of juicy ones.
Good.
There's one that the fellas have called an all-timer, right?
I think it's a Hall of Famer.
Is that what they called it?
Yeah.
Very good. We'll do the good, bad, and dirty. We might talk to one of our colleagues out west about Otani after he gives a statement. Unfortunately,
is your daughter going to call us for the scene center for the Iowa game?
She doesn't
the women's
know
Iowa
that
game?
She's calling, but yeah. I want her to.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark's last game in Iowa City.
This is her final game.
Yeah, I think they're playing West Virginia round two. You know, the women's side, they play home games.
Right.
You know, the higher seed. So
until they get to a certain level, right?
I think this is it.
It's the top four seeds get to host.
But
throughout?
Just the two rounds.
Just the first two rounds.
Just the two rounds, right. So tonight is her, you know, officially her final home game. And my daughter goes to Iowa, doesn't care at all about sports, but cares about this.
Okay.
She's become.
She should give us a scene setter.
The biggest women's
basketball fan. Is she interested in getting into the communications business?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, I've told this story before. During COVID, the Cubs and Marlins are in the playoffs, and I'm doing the sideline reporting. Not for ESPN, not for this is ABC National TV. I'm doing the sideline. Pretty big moment, right?
Of course.
For her dad. COVID, I'm the only reporter in the ballpark.
Right.
Doing the sideline mid-game. I get a text from her thinking maybe it's like, Dad, I saw you on TV. Good job. The text was, I've
my bank account's low. I need a little bit of an infusion.
Even better. I printed something off the printer in the basement. Can you go get it?
That's awesome.
Mid-game while I'm doing sideline for the Cubs in the playoffs on ABC. Is that your kid doesn't give a crap what you're doing?
Yes, but it's not. It, you know what? It's not vicious or intentional. It's just
the sweetest thing ever,
right? They're in their own
world. Because remember, she's home during COVID because of school.
Yes.
So I get it. She couldn't go down to the basement and get the thing off the printer.
Right.
Doesn't know I'm not home.
Right.
Doesn't know I'm on live TV nationally.
Yeah.
Can you go get the printer? So anyway, that's my daughter.
Okay.
We'll try to get her to call in.
Absolutely. Need a scene setter.
She'll be like, what? You're on the radio? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, exactly.
What are you doing, Dad?
Right. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Eddie on the north side. You're on ESPN 1000 before we get back to Ryan Poles. What's up, Eddie?
Good afternoon, guys. But something I read really quick before I get to the point with Otani. Deion Sanders says this NFL draft's going to be the Eli draft.
Yes.
He's warning everybody already.
Yes, yes. There's good audio.
So watch out for Caleb Williams. He might be in Washington.
Well, we got to play that.
What,
I did not hear it. What does it come from a place of source, or is he guessing?
I read it. I don't know if it was on ESPN or Yahoo. He says that I'm going to tell him if my son's not playing here, he's not going to play here or here. He's going to play where he wants to. That's what he said.
Right.
In the statement.
I know, and we'll play that a little bit later, but I don't think that's going to affect Caleb Williams.
I hope not. But as far as Otani, I believe these athletes shouldn't be able to bet on any sports. I mean, they have the resources of tens of millions of dollars where they're friends with NFL players, NBA players. You know, it affects bettors like us. They could be talking to them what's going on in the games. Oh, has this guy been out this night? You know what I mean?
Yeah, Eddie, these professional athletes have all sorts of friends. What's the difference if you have a friend that's another professional athlete or just a buddy you grew up with? They could be telling them something no matter who you are. So at some point, you know, you can't take away all their freedoms. If it's legal to gamble, you probably should be able to gamble except on your sport.
Yeah.
You know.
And if it comes through there, Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame then. I mean, it's just, you know.
Well, yeah. You know how I feel about
I've always then. Felt that way. Yeah. It's one thing to ban him from managing, but it has nothing to do with his playing career.
Legalized gambling, it doesn't erase. I mean, if people wanted to gamble even before legalized gamble, they were going to find a way to gamble.
Right. So that hasn't changed.
Yeah. This hasn't just open up the whatever it is.
If you grew up
the floodgates for gambling.
If you grew up with a professional athlete and you're still buddies with him, he could give you information anytime and nobody would know.
Of course.
And nobody would know at all. And it's, by the way, it's not. I don't even know if it's illegal to tell your buddy, hey, yeah, Zach LaVine's hurting tonight. Like, you're allowed to say that. Now, you're not allowed to say that and knowingly the guy goes and bets. You're not, that information. But
look.
Freedom of speech.
It's also, once you have decided to partner up with some of these gambling entities, which I'm fine with, it's another source of revenue, which then ultimately gets kicked into the player revenue pool and guys get paid more. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. You just have to make sure that you are even more transparent now than you've ever been. Yeah. Whether it's officiating, it's umpires, it's whatever it is. That's why I think that instant replay should be expanded. Once you start taking money from the gambling entities, which I think is great, you have to be more transparent than ever before to eliminate any of the the suspicion that may linger out there
your sport. And you just hope they do police themselves in one way, because they're making millions anyway. So to risk their whole career and their current contract to bet on their own sport, that's the deterrent, right? You're going to avoid this $700 million contract because, it'd be stupid.
Right. It's silly.
Let's hear what Deion Sanders had to say, because I have not heard this yet regarding this
idea. It was on a podcast, I believe, and they asked him, the two hosts of the podcast were asking him about it.
Where do you predict Shador and Travis going in the draft?
Top four.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
Anywhere from one through four. One of them is going to be one. Mm.
That's what I'm talking about.
One of them is going to be
speaking into existence.
And the latter one would not go behind four. Mm. Now, all this is subjective because I know where I want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget Shallow, okay? Mm-hmm. But I know where I want them to go. So there's certain cities that ain't going to happen.
It's okay, you want
a
point?
It's going to be it's going to be an Eli.
Now, is that it?
What was the podcast to make sure that we give the proper?
That was from $1 million worth of game.
Okay. Something I'm not aware now, of. Because I never had $1 million worth of game.
Was he saying that because he doesn't like the teams that they could be drafted by?
He basically, yes, yeah. He's saying that he is going. They are going to use their significant power to dictate where they're going to go, or more importantly, probably where they won't go.
See, the thing is, like, Shador isn't some high-level quarterback prospect. Maybe he ends up being the best prospect this year when it's all said and done, but he's not on the level of Caleb or even Eli or...
He'll be a first round. He'll be projected to go in the first round, won't he?
Probably. I mean, it could be a Kenny Pickett kind of draft next year. You know?
Hunter, the other kid was the top recruit in the country, well, wasn't he the year before?
Yeah.
Hunter,
he's also the Shohei of football. He plays corner and receiver at Colorado.
Yeah. Right.
And is very good at both.
Right.
As we head to break, let's play that final Ryan Poles cut on if he'll extend Keenan Allen, and then we'll talk to Courtney Cronin.
Yeah, I think down the road, I try to be intentional with the order that we do extensions. So we'll review that and kind of see what our order looks like. But for what he stands for, I would love to have him long term.
I think it's essential. When they traded for him, I thought it was a good trade, but I also thought that it was done with the intention of signing him to like a 2-year deal or 2-year extension, mm-hmm. so that A, you could kind of bring down this year's number a little bit, mm-hmm. and also you could provide your young quarterback, the first overall selection in the draft, at least 2 years with one of the true professionals at the position.
He used the word intentional with his extensions. I don't know if he meant chronological in
a way. I think he did. I think it'd be more important to get Keenan Allen signed to an extension at this point versus DJ, because DJ's got 2 years left on his deal, and if I'm DJ... Like, the market is only going to expand. And if he has a really good 2024, he's going to be able to ask for more after next year with 1 year remaining on his deal than he could if he asked for an extension during this season. So I would think time would be on his side.
Waddle and Rogers till 6:30. We'll talk to Courtney Cronin live from Orlando, where the NFL owners meetings are going on. That's next on ESPN 1000.